Welcome to the Minimum Viable Podcast, a project of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. Our mission is to inspire, connect, and empower people in order to promote a culture of innovation in the U.S. national security community. You can learn more about DEF and get involved at DEF.org. That's DEF.org. We look forward to your ideas and are excited to connect you with other doers working on hard problems.
All right. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum MVP, the Minimum Viable Podcast. We're on today with some great guests from around the innovation community, as well as the entrepreneur space, and we'll have a chance to introduce them all. My name is Trish Martinelli. I'm the Executive Director of the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. Really, really happy to welcome my friend Mark Anholt from the National Security Innovation Network. Mark, why don't you say hi?
The program manager for Foundry at the National Security Innovation Network. And we're going to be talking about Foundry a little bit more, but real quickly, it's a program that brings together cutting edge DoD technologies and matches them up with teams of entrepreneurs to assess their commercialization potential and possibly build new startup companies around those technologies.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And Mark, you have a hidden background in the Navy, don't you?
Yes, I did. After college, after ROTC, I joined the Navy as a Navy SEAL officer. I was only in for 5 years. I served at the SEAL Delivery Vehicle Team 1 out in Hawaii, and then I got out in 2000, so right before 9/11 happened, before all the fun started. So my mom was very happy that I chose to get out before all of that, but I missed all the excitement.
Well, if we're choosing teams to defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic, I choose Mark. But I also want to introduce some amazing friends. Ellen, why don't we toss over to you and give you a chance to say hello to everybody.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ellen Chang. I'm currently at BM&T. I'm a vice president of ventures. I run their HVAC labs, and I work with the Navy on innovation strategy. Sorted past. I'm also a naval officer, intelligence. I feel like the future is back to the future, because when I joined, it was the Soviet Union and it was all about Russia. Seems like to be the same thing right now. I ended up leaving the Navy active duty and having a career in banking and then in a couple of startups before joining Northrop Grumman for working with space and drone tech. And then over the last 5 years, really kind of vaulted out of Northrop Grumman and have been in the innovation space since then, joining BM&T 3 years ago. Thank you.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much. Ty, over to you.
It's great. Hard to follow. My name is Ty Sunanen. I am currently a director in Los Angeles for INSIN, the National Security Innovation Network. The hope is to develop a tech innovation ecosystem in partnership with academia, the private sector, and the DoD. Formerly a faculty member at Harvard University at the Kennedy School, Grad School of Education at the Business School. My hope is to demystify the black box of entrepreneurship, especially for women and people of color. And with that, I'm gonna pass it over.
Heather Joe Richmond.
Hi. Say hello. Hi, guys. I'm Heather Richmond here from sitting in Palo Alto, California. I've been out here for about 18 years. I was in DC for a number of years before that, but I've really built out a big investor community right at this intersection of defense innovation and investment. I am an entrepreneur in residence. I get to work with Ellen at BM&T regularly, which is amazing. We have a great group over there. Where we work with internal DoD and IC customers around innovation. I also run something called the Defense Investor Network, the DIN. I actually wanted ENSIN, the National Security Investor Network, thanks, but it was taken. So we're the DIN, which is a network of about 200 investors that put their Patriot hat on just before they put their investor hat on. So been a lot of educational efforts there going on about trusted capital, capital resources from countries of special concern, Russia obviously being one of them. But most importantly, really just kind of demystifying, like to Ty's point, around innovation, getting folks, getting world-class teams, world-class entrepreneurs to look forward to and want to work with the Department of Defense has been a big part of that effort. So I'll turn it over.
Thanks, Heather. Thanks so much. And Emily, I did not load this panel up with sailors, but but maybe I did. I don't know. I guess the Navy speaks to me.
Yes. Hi, I'm Emily Harmon, and I retired from working for the Navy as an officer and a civilian back in May of 2019. My last job was the director of the Department of the Navy's Office of Small Business Programs, and now I'm an entrepreneur myself, and I'm a coach and also a podcast host. So I really enjoy that.
Mark, welcome. Welcome to the podcast, the amazing Mark and the Foundry program. So tell us briefly what the Foundry program is. And remember, a lot of people that are listening don't know the National Security Innovation Network or our kind of ecosystem as well as we do. So shoot them straight, Mark. Okay,
Yeah, so Foundry is a program within the National Security Innovation Network. It's been around for a while based on a program called the FedTech Startup Studio. And that is based on this observation that there's a whole lot of really compelling novel technology being developed by the Department of Defense that often doesn't get further developed into capabilities. And sometimes it's just sitting on the shelf. There are also a lot of entrepreneurs who want to start their own business, but maybe don't have that $1 million idea. So FedTech brings those two together and see what happens. So it creates an opportunity for these entrepreneurs to build a new startup around cutting edge DoD technologies. That's exactly right. The government really is, the government labs are really good at creating these new technologies, new concepts, but they are not able to bring them to the commercial market to a point where it can develop a capability to come back to the DoD. So they really rely on the private sector to do that. The problem is that it's really hard to do business with the government. And unless the company knows how to access that technology, knows how to do business with the government, it's very difficult to get anywhere. So it really puts the startups, the individual entrepreneurs at a big disadvantage. So what Foundry does is provide those entrepreneurs with the curriculum and the resources and the knowledge and experience in order to do that. So the way it's set up is we will do a cohort that lasts 5 months or so. Mm-hmm. We will recruit technologies from the Department of Defense for that cohort. We'll recruit entrepreneurs. We'll form the entrepreneurs into teams around those technologies and then give them curriculum and training on lean startup methodology. We'll have them go out and do customer discovery interviews, assess the commercialization potential of the technology, assess the market, do a competitor analysis. And if they determine that this is a technology that they can build a new startup company around, we give them the tools to establish that startup, develop their go-to-market plan, license the technology from the lab, and start moving out on it. Yeah, absolutely. So the relationship with Ensign doesn't end when the program ends. Right. Ensign is very committed to helping those companies move forward, because if they don't succeed, we don't succeed. Our interests are very much aligned here. Our metrics are based on how well the entrepreneurs and the startups do that we work with.
Right.
So happy that you're doing this because this is such an important topic for me. We've known for a while that the more diversity we have on our teams, the better the outcomes are. At least we've thought that. As we gather more data, we can kind of maybe prove that. But right now, I have some really strong anecdotal data for that. We're trying to get more experiences, more background, more both ethnic and racial or ethnic and gender diversity in our iterations. But honestly, we're not quite there yet. So the last cohort had maybe 25% women in it, and five of the 22 teams were woman led. Mm-hmm. However, the top two teams at our showcase day at the end of the cohort were both women-led, and three of the top four teams were women-led. So the women pretty significantly outperformed in that cohort. So that says to me, this is anecdotal evidence, but that says to me that if we get more diversity into our program, we're probably going to have much better outcomes. Right. So that's very important to us.
And we're not.
No, not at all. And you know what? So we've been trying to do this. So the last time we really tried to expand our outreach and really get our message out to more diverse communities. But the problem is, if you're reaching more diverse communities with the same old message, you're not going to get great results. You know, they're going to hear your message, but they're still going to think, that really isn't for me. It sounds like they're looking for someone else. So we really need to tailor our message, modify our message so that we're speaking to these diverse communities and letting them know that that's what we want. So while, you know, we're trying to get out the message that while, you know, we're not just looking for what you would typically consider the ideal candidate for a startup studio, someone right. with an advanced degree, someone with an MBA from Harvard.
Right.
We're looking for all types of people. We want, yeah, we although the technologists and the business people are important, we're also looking for the creatives. We're looking for the communicators. We're looking for operators, looking for career shifters. It doesn't matter what your degree is or what if you have a degree or what the degree is in. It just matters that you're an entrepreneur and you're an innovator. It doesn't matter if your background is something that's related to defense or not. We just want we want people that want to start a new company. And the bottom.
Yeah, great. So one, it's great to be here on International Women's Day. I used to teach at Harvard University. I taught mid-career students, and the median age of my students was 57 and a half. And I would say for the women, the biggest regret when they took my class on social entrepreneurship, startup management, was this: I wish I had been an entrepreneur earlier. I wish I had given myself permission to do it earlier. Because guess what? The greatest barrier to entry with the Department of Defense or to entrepreneurship in general isn't the black box of the organization or the federal government, it's yourself. And what's great about women is they hold multiple superpowers, right? They're mothers, they are problem solvers, they hold multiple perspectives at once, they recognize strengths in others, they play various roles in an organization. So you don't have to come in as the founder CEO, you could play various roles. But I would say the biggest thing that woman who is even contemplating about becoming an entrepreneur, contemplating about foundry is this: take that first step. Because guess what? It's a win-win for you. It's a win for the DoD. It's a win in terms of having economies of scale for the enterprise that you're creating and for making money. All you have to do is take that first step.
Or other women team already formed, right? So they come to you as individuals and you match
them. Right. So that's a great question. So we found from basically working with investors that what they're looking for in a founding team is 2 to 3 members. So we form teams of 3 at the beginning of the cohort, and sometimes there's, you know, sometimes we'll lose people, sometimes they'll reshuffle around. The applicants can come in as either individuals or pre-formed teams. So if you apply with some of your partners, we will put you in a team together. If not, we will match you up with people that have complementary skill sets. So we try to get teams that are balanced. So a technologist, a business person, and an operator, a creative person, someone that's got, we've only got 3 people on the team, and I talked about all those different types of different hats, but most people will have multiple hats. So we try to get everything as much as possible on a team. Trying to get as much diversity there as possible. Yeah, that's a really important point. It's something I always stress to the entrepreneurs in our program is that we are a DoD organization, but we do not want to push them towards the DoD market by any stretch. Because like you said, if your market plan is just to go after DoD funding, I'm like, you're gonna have a real hard time. I hope you like eating ramen noodles for a long time. It's gonna be a while. What we want is for the teams, the new ventures, to be successful. Because the only way we get anything back is if they're successful first and foremost. So look at the commercial market, look at venture funding, look at the non-dilutive funding that you get from DoD sources like SBIR, STTR, the Small Business Innovative Research Grants. Look at all of those and figure out, based on your technology, what the best pathway is to success. And when you're during the Foundry program, you'll be doing a ton of customer discovery to determine what those pathways are. And we want you to do as many customer discoveries with DoD partners as with commercial partners, not because we want to push you into that market, but because we want you to understand what the use cases are. So once you become established, once you've got your feet on the ground, that you know that there's that other market there that you can come back to and expand your
academia and the private market. So a little bit more about how you kind of understand that the way.
I would say the top three learnings I've had over the years and working in different sectors into entrepreneurship is this: one, learn to handle ambiguity, because you will certainly deal with a lot of that. Contracting with the federal government is not an easy or linear process. Number two, I would say make sure that, as Mark alluded to earlier, you got to hustle. We're going to help provide tools, a support system, a network, as the other panelists have mentioned and will continue to foot stomp, is you are not alone in this process, but we can't hold your hand at every single step of the way, right? Part of it is that self-motivation and just the trusting that, you know what, you're going to take it one day at a time. And third, but most important, is focus on the product. What it comes down to is that the first question, whether it's investors, whether it's partners, whether it's people who want to join your team, is this: tell me more about the product. What makes it viable? What makes it lasting? Why is it relevant now? And that's key. So the more you focus on that and sort of less on the self as a driver for this, the better you'll be. Because at the end of the day, the DoD is looking for technology that will help them maintain its mission critical status. It's a really good aspect that's a win for the women who are entrepreneurs. And guess what? They come back and they end up mentoring younger women to help demystify the process early on. With that, I'm going to turn it back to you, Trish, because you have phenomenal women on the panel.
We do indeed. A lot of phenomenal women in this room. So Ellen, Ty kind of tipped the hat to your background and your service. So you've probably seen a lot of female entrepreneurs and had conversations with them along the way about, especially in the DoD space. So do you have some background or some insight you'd like to share with some of the women you've worked with?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just provide the audience with the context, some context. So when I left the Navy, I got my MBA, and then one of my earliest jobs was a startup. It was the late 90s and it was the dot-com boom bust timeframe. Well, I would say as I was calculating my next set of steps after my MBA, I did go to a big bank, but it wasn't, probably a year later, left and vaulted into a startup and was caught with by friends, right? So usually when you do a startup, you team up with other people. So just as Ty said, you find that support network and you just have to, I guess, maybe I was too stupid or ignorant to know better, but you just get out there and you figure it out. I mean, I feel like all of us in any profession, as we get out there, we start and we do that. That's what the Navy taught me. You get out there and you figure it out. Ultimately our startup didn't raise a lot of money. It was kind of March of 2000 and the whole market came crashing down, but we did put an imprint out there and I tended, I learned a lot. So that actually vaulted me into what I do on the side. I guess you would call, I have an investing habit. I do quite a bit of investing, mostly in deep tech, a lot of space tech, starting to look at blue tech right now. And then I do work with several women who are founders. And I would say that those teams that are diverse, I wouldn't say all women, right, or all men, but those teams that are diverse tend to approach problems from different perspectives that allow them to be more complete. So that's probably the superpowers. Like, how can we actually think about the problem that we're trying to solve from a market perspective, you know, technology perspective, and make sure we're successful? Most of the time I see a lot of, you know, especially with different personalities on a team, you can play the personalities off of each other as you're going to market, as you're trying to raise money, as well as you're trying to, you know, trying to get that sale. And that's what I've seen. The challenge has been, and I'll go back to the fact that there are not a lot of women who are starting companies who probably, I'm not sure, it's probably a confidence issue, or they're not starting companies in domains that we're familiar with. Like there's lots of women entrepreneurs, but they might not be starting dual use companies, and maybe they don't know where to begin. And so we're trying to understand what that landscape looks like. I think as we, become more participatory in the entrepreneurial community, we'll gain confidence. In fact, just earlier today, I was on another networking type of a meeting where I guess this is a thing, but a lot of women are heads down working, and they wake up in their 40s and find out that all of a sudden, you know, they have had this career and they have all this network, and now they want to go use it. And by helping each other, they can provide the support that's needed. And I didn't realize that was kind of what we experienced, but it certainly illuminated that. I guess I'm saying this because to the folks who are interested in starting a company, I think you do have the network out there. I guess maybe Heather, I'll pull you into the conversation. What have you seen, just given your background and that you also have a entrepreneurial bent, and you know your title is EIR, so I'll throw it over to you.
It is. Thank you. I mean, I sit at this really weird intersection of investing and defense, just like Ellen does. And there aren't a lot of us. I'll tell you that. I kind of throw it back to twice in my life, I've been handed a small thing, a small being, if you will, a child, right? Entrepreneurship 101 right there, like here, go raise this person, right? And so trust me, after that, ladies, a company's no big deal. and I kind of throw back to that. I saw a meme recently, and I would always say, fake it till you make it, right? Just kind of jump in and start learning. And you can only learn so much from books. You can only learn so much from, you know, you got to get in there and get your hands dirty and figure out what you're good at. And as I kind of alluded to earlier, you know, I didn't serve in the military. I have a different skill set than a lot of people in the defense sector, and what that has become. And frankly, I've been, you know, wildly unqualified for every job I've ever had. But you become qualified, and then you help qualify others. But I think really, there's a lot I don't know, but I know who knows, and I know how to pull these people together to create a team for the foundry, or to create a team to tackle, When Navy handed us $30 million to start Energy Accelerator, which is something that's now called Elemental Accelerator. We are using Hawaii as a test bed for energy innovation. This was right after kind of all that venture money left energy innovation, and Navy said, we need some help. And it was amazing because it was two women in Hawaii, and then they found me. And so it was three women that started that. And one of my proudest days, we were about 15 people, and we had to hire a white male for diversity, which was pretty amazing. Because we had a Hawaiian guy, a Japanese guy, and all the rest were chicks, and it was crazy. And so you know, I think the culture in the Hawaiian culture is just a lot more matriarchal, to be honest. And you know, meetings are kind of it can be done, and it will be done. And there's been a lot of mind shift here in Silicon Valley around that, and you know, making sure that women, you know, founders are being heard. I would say one other thing, just as far as, you know, is like team formation, and just something to make everyone aware of, is depending on kind of where you are in your career. If you were in graduate level education at all, both Ellen and I work closely with our team that started Hacking for Defense, which is a university-based program. And actually the unintended benefit is that we're kind of educating and teaching the next generation of defense or national security-minded entrepreneurs. And so I think, you know, I'd like to really figure out a way to tap into that network as well, as far as, you know, the numbers coming in, as far as, you know, the students, especially the females, frankly, that were interested in national security work, not necessarily going inside, but doing it kind of from the outside, was a very low number. And when the class ended, it was 98% that wanted to be involved in national security in some way, shape or form. And I think a big piece of that can be done from the outside. So I think we've always thought, do you need to go move to Washington DC and work on the Hill, or do you need to go enlist in the military to actually be part of this community? And I think we can move fast on the outside. And so I think really, you know, locking down and finding these entrepreneurs and educating them about the challenges that we have in defense and enabling them. And I think the Foundry program is absolutely incredible. And I think I mentioned earlier there, you know, we're also building a massive network of private capital contributors, whether it's venture capitalists, private equity, high net worth individuals and family offices there that are interested in national security. So I think the resources that are available now for all entrepreneurs that are national security focused, but especially the women, there are a lot more resources out there now than there were even a few years ago. So I just encourage you, you know, I mean, if you can raise a kid, you can start a company.
If you can raise a kid, you can do anything, right?
Right.
What's the one piece of advice that you kind of reach back to give yourself, you know, 15, 20 years ago when it comes to being a woman and being in an entrepreneurial space or endeavor?
I found out in a funny way, because women ask for help differently than men do typically. And I don't mean to generalize. I really hate generalizing. I sit in this weird intersection and I've just learned, like, I'm not intimidating, and that's a good thing. I will go ask questions. And like I said earlier, like, I'm never worried about trying to look like I prefer to be the dumbest person in the room, because I'm going to learn something. Right. And so I think asking those questions, getting people to help, like I said, you know, most of the things that I do, I didn't know anything about when I started, but I knew the people that did. And so, asking for help, and like, really, and then people want to help, and people want to help you succeed and help you, you know, get engaged. And, but I think just going for it. I mean, just, you know, look around and, you know, I don't have a Harvard MBA. I, you know, don't have any of that. And, but I have a lot of mission focus. I'm scrappy as hell. And, you know, we're going to get these things done, and they have to get done. So.
That's awesome. Well, I'd like to bring Emily into the conversation. And I don't know if she is like the single digit number of female graduates from the United States Naval Academy. Not the first, but definitely a woman who found herself in a man's world very early on and kind of continued in that. But one of the really cool things that you were talking about the first time that we met was the kind of bridge between the Department of Defense and small businesses. And, you know, by definition, I think all of the companies coming out of Foundry would be considered small businesses. So if you don't mind, Emily, kind of tell us a little bit about your background with small business in the DoD and some of those entrepreneurial ventures that you saw led by women in that role.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for having me. I was in the sixth class of women to graduate from the Naval Academy. So there were about 72 women in my class. And I was just reflecting on something that refers to asking for help, because we really didn't go to each other to ask for help. And I think that is something that women entrepreneurs need to do or should do. Don't be embarrassed to ask for help. But, you know, in order to ask for help at the Naval Academy from another woman, I mean, I had a few roommates, but I'd have to go out of my room and down a hall. And we were just all so stressed. And like Ellen said, we were heads down, just trying to make it through. And when we look back, we realize we could have banded together and helped each other through more. And so that's what I really encourage women entrepreneurs to do, help each other move forward. And so I worked for the Department of the Navy as an officer and then as a civilian, and I retired in May of 2019. And when I retired, I was the director of the Office of Small Business Programs for the Navy and the Marine Corps. And so I saw a lot of small businesses and even non-traditional suppliers approaching the Navy and the Marine Corps wanting to do business with them. And a couple of things that I saw that worked are women that were confident and were able to ask for help. And I even wrote a chapter in this book called Becoming a Government Contracting Expert. And my chapter says three things: know where you are and where you're going. Okay. And when I say know where you are, I mean, know who you are. Understand, like, the energy that you give off when you're in the room and how other people react to you. Be self-aware. And so know yourself, know what, and then know where you're going, ask for help, and be persistent. And what was so cool in this chapter is I listed several podcast episodes I did because my podcast is on facing adversity, moving forward. And, you know, I don't think you all would disagree that, you know, it's kind of tough to be in the government contracting space. So I equated that to facing adversity. And how do you move forward? You got to be persistent. You've got to do things that you're not ready to do. You've got to start. You've got to network. And you've got to ask for help. And so the other thing that I would say too is don't lead with your socioeconomic status. As a government employee, I could really care less if you're a woman-owned small business or a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. If you lead with that, what I want to know is, can you provide a product or a service that my command or my warfighter needs? And then knowing that you're a woman-owned or service-disabled veteran-owned, that tells me, oh, there's some contracting vehicles, there's some laws that allow me to get to you differently, but so don't lead with that. And then also with knowing where you are, knowing who you are, is like, know what gives you energy. Because I feel like a lot of my career, I was pushing, I was stressed, I had anxiety. And I feel like now with what I'm doing, I absolutely love what I'm doing as a coach. So make sure if you really love it, it's not a job.
Right.
It's not work.
And I think that's so neat because the first time that I met you, I didn't actually really know about your background in small business because, I mean, this is, maybe it's an overused term, but it's a little meta, right? Because the person who was working small businesses now has a small business of your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of touched on it when you were talking just now, but I would love it if you would kind of introduce the concept, just the idea very briefly, of the positive intelligence that you shared with us and some of the saboteurs and how that framing is different than saying, oh, I'm such an idiot, you know, or, you know, some of the self-criticism that women can sometimes get into.
Yeah, well, I think where we met is I did this workshop at the Naval X event on, it was on diversity inclusion, but I brought in the positive intelligence framework. So I'm a positive intelligence coach. You can Google the term positive intelligence. It was developed by Shirzad Shamin, who's a graduate of Stanford. He's a Stanford researcher. And it's all about how our minds can sabotage us. I'm sure every woman knows about the inner critic, okay? Everybody knows about your inner critic. What Shirzad calls that is our judge. Our judge doesn't judge just us. It judges more than we realize, more than we're conscious of, but it judges circumstances. Like, this is bad. You know, the government's not responding to my email, or this is good, or this is bad. It judges circumstances, situations. It judges other people. And it judges ourselves. And then the judge will recruit some or all or one or two other saboteurs. My top saboteur was hyperachiever. And my hyperachiever tells me, Emily, if you achieve this, then you're going to be happy. And then I achieve it. It's like, no, this. Then I achieve that. Nah, this. And I never find happiness. I mean, real inner joy. And I also have a pleaser saboteur, putting everybody and everything else before me. So there's other saboteurs like avoider. If you have an avoider saboteur in your mind and you are starting a company, you're going to be facing some challenges. So you need to recognize that avoider saboteur and have the skills to silence it. And that's what the positive intelligence program's about. There's stickler, controller, there's others, but there's an assessment you can take. And that's what I mean when I say, learn about yourself.
I'm pretty sure they all are living rent-free in my mind right now, but I'm working on it. I see you nodding in the background there. You know, clearly some of what Emily was saying was resonating with you.
some, all of what Emily was saying was resonating with me. All that Heather and Ellen Chang were saying was resonating with me. Let me foot stomp and echo a few things. The voices in our heads don't always have our best interests in mind. And what I've noticed, not just from female entrepreneurs who are successful, but all entrepreneurs who are successful, is they focus on what's in their control, not what's outside of their control. So to Emily's point, because listen, I used to be this way. Like, why am I not getting an email response? It's been 24 hours. The way I've come to handle that is twofold. And I hope, Emily, this resonates with you, is one, learn to handle ambiguity. There will be a lot of ambiguity. Contracting with the federal government is weird. It's tough. It's nonsensical at times, right? And it's nonlinear. So you come in and you think you have the best product out there and you're not getting the response in a timely manner. Well, there's some ambiguity that you have to deal with. And guess what? That's a great sensibility for all leaders and managers to be able to do. The second, I really want to echo what Emily said with product viability. Make sure you lead with that first. I was embedded with Academy Investor Network, and I know you folks are going to hear from Emily McCahan, one of the co-founders of AIN. And our focus was to really support women getting private funding from the VC world. And the first question the panel of interviewers would ask for funding, didn't matter if you were a person of color or a woman, was, tell me why your product matters, right? That will be the first question off the bat. So if you focus on product viability, have a belief in yourself, quiet the voices in your head to the degree possible, right? Focus on what's in front of you, learn to handle ambiguity. But most important, I want to echo what Heather said, take that first step, do it, because you don't want to end up taking my class as a seasoned woman in advanced leadership and entrepreneurship and saying to yourself, damn it, I wish I had done this sooner. I wish I gave myself permission to have done this sooner, because you will surprise yourself and your team will rise to the occasion if you give them that opportunity.
That's perfect. I see a lot of heads nodding and a lot of people kind of jumping in. Emily.
I just wanted to say that, you know, once you recognize these saboteurs in our head, like my hyperachiever really helped me get to where and helped me make a senior executive. Okay. But it helped me do that with stress. And you can actually accomplish with ease and flow. And so as you're an entrepreneur, as you're going through your checklist, as you're doing what you need to do, focus also on who you are being while you're doing. What's your energy level like? How are you coming across to other people? And how, you know, and so that, I think that is really important. And in the with positive intelligence, you learn how to switch to SAGE from the saboteur mode to SAGE, which is where you get curious. Well, why didn't that person respond to my email? Because maybe, Ty, you thought, well, they just don't care. Well, maybe they're bogged down with a bunch of work. Maybe they didn't get it. Maybe it went to their junk. So our minds tell us stuff that we just automatically believe that's the reason. And so that can cause so much stress. So if we learn how to get curious and how to be calm and clear-headed, we're going to feel more in ease and flow throughout the day.
Yeah, and I'll come back to Heather and Ellen, because I know that you guys have been in the room, right? When decisions are being made about like, okay, we have this $1 million and we've got 10 people in front of us to consider funding, you know, how much are we going to give each? And some of those decisions that are made from the side of the table of, we have abundance we want to share with you. So we've talked a little bit about what it's like being on the side of the entrepreneur and maybe kind of getting in our heads a little bit, but help bring us into the room where those VC and those funding decisions are being made.
So I'll jump in there. I'll start. So I'm an investor on the angel level. So we have a syndicate, and it tends to be maybe on a syndicate level, a crowdsourced decision. But our calculus is generally around the team and the fit of the founder. Personally, when I look at deals, I'm looking at the team, and sometimes I kind of make a judgment call based on the makeup of the team. You know, it's really hard, but I was like, several deals recently in space tech have been all older white men. I was like, okay, really, there's not even young man. So from that perspective, you're just not going to have diversity of thought. And so you actually make some sort of judgment call based on the makeup of the team. But you know, investors in thinking through that investment, I'll do the due diligence by looking at the market, looking at the product, and looking at how the team may or may not be able to navigate from point A to point B. And generally, if there's a fit, a cultural fit with us, then we are way more inclined to make an investment. Our investment's 250 to 50, sometimes a million. I will say the reason the coachability aspect is so important is because we want to be able to come in and actually help. And if there's teams that don't want to necessarily, if they just want cash, then that's not really, it's not a fit for us. And you'll hear investors talk about a fit for us a lot. You know, everyone has their own investment thesis. It's a very personal kind of business. Even on the large venture capital firm Sequoia, right? They'll still talk about fit for us. So that's what I have to offer to the community here. I guess, Heather, maybe you have your insights.
Yeah, I remember we, you know, sit in a room and I can't highlight this enough. There was always a difference between the entrepreneurs that were asking you for money or the entrepreneurs that were providing you an opportunity, right? And so when I would go and fundraise, it wasn't, I'm not asking you for dollars. I am giving you the greatest opportunity you are ever going to see as an investor to be part of this rocket ship that I'm about to, you know, take off in. And it was just a completely different mindset. I think it's fair to say in the defense world, I'm a bit of a hype girl, and I will get in there and get people excited about things. And like, cause I'm excited about them. I'm passionate about them. And I had somebody recently, I started this fund, and they said, I think you will this into existence. And if you're a tenacious entrepreneur, like you will things into existence, you literally make them happen no matter what it takes. And so I think, you know, having that energy, like to what Emily was saying, like I get so much energy by engaging with this community. I believe in it so much. And so I never feel like I'm working. And I think, you know, one of the greatest compliments I got during Zoom land and COVID was I have more energy after having a meeting with you than before, and having a Zoom call. That's it. I was like, okay, great. That's
also rare. That's like a treasure. Rare. Right.
But I think one really enjoying and believing in what you do, but presenting it as an opportunity. If you really believe in what you're doing and what you're selling or what you're trying to get funding for, you're presenting an opportunity, and you're presenting the opportunity to invest in you as an entrepreneur. And I think you can always tell which teams are coming at it that way versus coming at it as, can I please have some money, or please, you know, I'm asking for something from you versus giving you something. So I think just that little mindset makes a big difference.
Yeah, there's a reason why people drive around town with the 12th man, you know, kind of license plates frame around there, because the opportunity to join the team, even when it's just from the stands, is really something amazing. And Mark, you had some thoughts.
Yeah, so the program that I manage, Foundry, we're dealing with entrepreneurs at the very first stages of entrepreneurship. This is, you know, we're taking individuals, we're helping them to form into teams, we're giving them some of the tools they need to start a business, but they haven't even started a business yet. And like I said before, we see the value in having a diverse pool of entrepreneurs, to having more women, more ethnic diversity, more diversity in backgrounds. But like you guys were talking about, there is this, you know, the most important thing is for people just to do it. So we're trying to decrease the barriers of entry, but I think there's still a lot of perceived barriers to entry into the entrepreneurship world. So I guess my question is, what are the things that keep people from taking that step earlier on in their careers? And how do we address those? How do we give them the confidence that they can get past those barriers and actually take that first step?
This is Emily, and I would say the barriers are what we perceive the barriers to be in our mind and how we think about things. When we look at situations or circumstances and stuff, we have thoughts. Those thoughts generate our feelings. How we feel about something generates action or inaction and creates results. We're creating results in our lives every day. We can make a decision on what results we want to create if we're more conscious about our thoughts and our feelings. That's what I would have to say about that.
I'll go next. This is Heather. I really like what Emily said about kind of know yourself. I definitely have an entrepreneurial spirit and a bend, but I like to build things. And part of building is I like to build a team around me. And I don't want to be the CEO. I know that. I want to find somebody who else to be the CEO. There's things that CEOs have to do. I don't want to do. I know that. I think anybody, but today, if you're a woman and you're thinking, I don't really want to be the CEO of a company, but I'd be an amazing CMO, or I'd be an amazing operator, or I'd be an amazing this. It's okay to jump in, find the thing, start the thing, build your team, like build your posse. And that's what I like to do. And I like to get in there and build stuff. And when Ty was talking about ambiguity, there's a lot of it. And women have very strong gut instinct, I think, back to parenting. And trust that, trust yourself, you know, and you know, if it's going the wrong direction, change it. No harm, no foul. But I think just getting in there and doing that, but don't think of it that you have to be the head of the company all the time forever. I've founded companies that I wasn't the CEO of and I loved it. And even now Ellen knows I'll just start building something and intentionally sometimes, you know, hand it off to other people when they, you know, so if you like to build, or if you like to do things, you know, kind of be part of a later stage, something or other, kind of find what makes you the happiest, but don't, you know, like I said, I know I don't want to be a CEO and that's okay. But I just get in there and start and then go find those people and bring them in and bring that expertise and surround myself with it so that we can succeed.
This is Emily. Okay. Having a military background, I feel like there are times when I'm risk adverse. So I would want to work with Heather, who is just, let's go. She'll give me that confidence, right? So seek out people that have strengths in areas where you don't have strengths. That's why you've got to know yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. 100% know yourself is definitely important. I would say that way you can anticipate, you know, kind of what Emily's evoking, which is, you know, how are you going to respond to something emotionally? And, you know, especially the entrepreneurial journey can be challenging at the startup phase, right? Your whole family's going to be involved no matter whether or not they're working on the startup or not. And so you have to be mentally ready to be able to adjust. It's a lot more of an agile lifestyle. You have to be thinking on the fly. It certainly challenges all aspects, but it's super fun. So I guess if we're encouraging people to make a leap, I would say make a leap. There's probably ways to test entrepreneurship without jumping in with both feet. You know, you can actually start to be advisor to startups and see what that feels like, looks like. You might want to stay there or you might find yourself in a position. I don't know, some people have been laid off recently, or people have actually left the workforce. That's the perfect time to even start, you know?
This is Ty. I'm going to echo what Ellen just said, who was the previous speaker. I'm going to say ditto to what everyone just said. You know, the only two things I can possibly add and build on what the collective themes are here is it's okay not to have all the answers, because you won't. And that applies across the board, whether or not you were a female entrepreneur. I certainly didn't with my first company, and I certainly didn't with my sixth company. There's an arc to everything. There's a beginning, there's a middle, and the end. And you're going to be peppered with a lot of technical questions at the beginning, right? Minimal product viability. You're going to be peppered with metrics and more metrics. You're going to be peppered with the exit strategy, all of that. I think you heard wonderful themes from the panel. And one of them is to build a team around you, right? Like know your strengths and know how to bring in people to complement those. Also, just know that your team will help you with some of the answers. And your team also include investors. Like they want to help you be successful. They really do. Like no one's in it to say, I don't want to have you be successful. No, because it's a win-win for them as well. So dealing with the ambiguity of not having answers to a lot of questions, it's okay. But not taking that first step is probably the biggest regret I've seen in women later on in life who said, I shoulda, woulda, coulda. And I hate that. It's painful, right? For me to observe and witness as a executive coach. But those that take that leap of faith, you're in it for an incredible ride. And the best thing about it is you become a more empowered human being for yourself, for your family, for your community. And it's amazing, right? Like this, you evolve and all of a sudden your cape grows even longer, right? Like you get the first one as a mother, someone who goes to higher education, your accomplishments, your accolades, and that cape just grows and grows. When you become an entrepreneur, everything that you've dealt with, suffered, loss, crisis, all that helps elevate you as an entrepreneur even better. That's what I got, Trish. Thank you.
That's amazing. Thanks, Ty. And I guess I didn't think that I would have anything to add here, but the one thing that kind of came up for me over and over again as we went around was my own relationship with risk. So, you know, as a career military person, you know, we're taught to really de-risk the situation. If we've got an operation, we have to think about what are the potential risks. We have to mitigate those risks. We have to dial them down. And I know a little bit in my own personal life that I have felt like, you know, if I risk everything and if I were to mess it up or if I were to lose it, then what would happen? it brings to mind Reese Witherspoon's kind of conversation when she accepted an award for being a leading supporter of women, especially in the arts. And she was like, you know, whatever will we do? What women always do, we come up with new answers. We come up with new routes to success. We come up with a new way to make it work, you know. But there is something, you know, for me that has been kind of planted, and I'm weeding it out of the garden right now of my relationship with risk. And like, you know, this question of, oh gosh, what will I do if I fail? You'll do something else. You'll start something else and you'll just do something else. So let's come back to Mark. Mark, the whole genesis of this conversation and this amazing program that we have for women entrepreneurs at Ensign. Why don't you bring us home? Tell us just one more time the kind of headline about what Foundry is, how they can apply, and when we need our women to join us in this entrepreneurial journey.
Absolutely. So, I mean, everything that we've been talking about today is great. It's it helps inform me as I design and manage this program, because as I said before, the more diversity we get into the program, the better outcomes we have. And, you know, we've talked about kind of an alignment of interest. This is a case where the department's interests are parallel to the interests of the entrepreneurs and the participants in the program. We measure our success by how well the entrepreneurs do. So I've definitely seen that the more diversity we have, the better the outcomes are. So I'm just looking for ways to increase that diversity, to decrease the barriers to entry. I know we talked about, you know, it's important to be willing to embrace risk, but I want to try to manage as much of that risk as possible. So the way the program is set up is it's a 5-month cohort where we provide tons of curriculum about lean startup methodology, about how to do customer discovery, how to do a market assessment, and how to determine if the technology you've been matched with from the Department of Defense has commercialization potential. And it's all designed so you can keep your day job. So you're gonna have to work your butt off because we expect about 20 hours a week, but we do all of our seminars in the evenings or on the weekends. So you don't have to give up your day job. And for me, that's very important to decreasing the barriers of entry, because if we only have people in the program who have the financial stability to give up their day job, then we're losing out on a whole lot of entrepreneurs who add a ton of value. So we're trying as much as we can to decrease the barriers of entry because we want everyone involved.
And when's our date? When's our magic date circled on the calendar that everybody needs to get their application in by?
So first let me say, go to the NSIM.mil website /foundry. That gives you all, more details about the program. There are two more information sessions that are coming up tomorrow and on the 16th, I guess. What is tomorrow? Tomorrow and a week from tomorrow.
Yes.
You can register for those on the NSIM website as well. So go to the NSIM Foundry page, learn as much as you can about it. The deadline for entry for application is March 20th. Mm-hmm. So we still got a little bit of time. There's still two information sessions left. You can ask questions. You can talk to me. You can talk to the FedTech team who actually executes the whole program. And start to get to know the other applicants too, because we want everyone to network and start Absolutely. To develop relationships. So if you can build out your team before the cohort starts, that's even better.
Okay, so I will spell it out for you. If you're at your computer and you're thinking about swinging by the Foundry page, go to www.ensign, that's November Sierra, India November.mil, and just search on our homepage for the term Foundry. And you will find everything that Mark has mentioned. I have seen firsthand how quick and easy the application process can be. From start to finish, it's about 30 minutes, and it's very intuitive and very easy to do. So really looking forward to coming back after the application window closes and really talking about how many women decided to lean into their entrepreneurship and join us on this journey. So I'd like to wrap up today and just say thank you so much to all of the people on the panel, all of the people listening, and just really excited to host this. Really excited to also share some of the exciting events that are coming up in the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum. The big one, 7 April in Boston, Massachusetts, the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum will be debuting the Innovation Ecosystem Map that has been updated since 2018. And we're super excited to have people in the room and online to join us 7 April from Boston, Massachusetts. So again, thank you to all of our panelists. Thank you, Mark, for sharing the Foundry program with us. And thank you all for listening.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. We love ideas and feedback. So feel free to send your thoughts to hello@deaf.org. For more great content and to stay in the loop about community events and activities, follow us on social media and subscribe to our monthly newsletter. Everyone plays a part in building the innovative national security culture we want to see. To find where you fit, just go to deaf.org/join. That's def.org/join.